This is the BBC.
This podcast is supported by advertising outside the UK.
Jetzt ist Herbst und bald stehen schon wieder die Feiertage vor der Tür. Das kann auch für Hunde ganz schön stressig sein. Viele Vierbeiner reagieren unter anderem mit einer gestörten Verdauung und das ist wiederum Stress für ihre Besitzer. Aber es gibt schnelle und einfache Hilfe. Das Probiotikum Purina ProPlan Fortiflora. Streu einfach einen Beutel über das tägliche Futter. Die außergewöhnliche Zusammensetzung mit lebenden, guten Darmbakterien stellt das Gleichgewicht im Darm wieder her. Natürlich kannst du ProPlan Fortiflora auch präventiv oder bei alltäglichen Verdauungsbeschwerden einsetzen. Es unterstützt auch bei Ernährungsumstellungen oder Antibiotikaeinnahme. Purina ProPlan Fortiflora. Jetzt auf shop.purina.de.
BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Hello, we're now just weeks away from the new government's first budget, and the speculation is skyrocketing. There are lots of predictions, lots of suggestions, quite a few apprehensions as well. And that's maybe not surprising when the Chancellor and the PM have both been warning of pain and difficult decisions as they take steps to plug what Rachel Reeves says is a £22 billion black hole left by the previous government. You have been sending us a lot of questions about what might be in the budget and what any changes might mean for you, from inheritance tax to capital gains tax to pensions relief. So in this Moneybox Live podcast, we're going to try and clear out our inbox by answering as many as we can. So how do people feel about potentially paying more?
I think got a cheek, actually, because people are trying to save pensions and everything. You know, there's a big question mark over that.
I myself am a high rate taxpayer. I don't mind paying more tax. I think at the moment, I think it's lazy taxation. I think they're going for the low hanging fruit.
What I don't agree with is we've earned this money. It's like being taken off us and we've worked hard for it.
Now, before we meet today's experts, let's hear from Susan. She emailed us to say her finances haven't yet recovered from COVID and from the cost of living crisis, and she's pretty worried about what's coming next.
We've got an overdraft, which is considerable. We have credit cards. We have taken equity out of our house, and this house is our future security. It's our care in old age, and we want to be able to help our sons. So when I'm gone, I can rest assured that at least we've been able to give them something. I am very worried about the threats towards inheritance tax.
Can I ask about savings and pensions? Do you have any kind of safety net there?
We haven't got much in the way of savings, not much in the way of pension. All our money is in our house. We're not able to go out and support restaurants, buy new cars, go to the cinema, theatre, travel. We really have a very severe budget problem of our own. And it is extremely anxiety provoking if Rachel Reeves and Keir Starmer do apply painful, big asks, tough action on us now. It needs to be gradual. It needs to be steady.
Well, there you go. Susan says she's got her own budget problems. And listening to that are today's experts, here to tax their minds by answering your questions. I'm joined by Elsa Littlewood, who's tax partner at accountancy and business advisory firm BDO, and also Kirsty Stone, who's a financial planner at the private office. Good afternoon.
Hi.
Good afternoon. Kirsty, the Treasury told us, pretty simply, we do not comment on speculation around tax changes, but lots of people seem to be quite anxious about what might be in the budget. There was one consumer confidence measure that dropped really significantly in September. Do you think other people are having the same kinds of anxieties as Susan?
Yeah, from my experience, absolutely, that is the case. I think the fear of the unknown is often greater than actually what happens or what is going to be announced. But the speculation and the kind of force in which the government have said this is going to be a tough budget has caused a lot of anxiety and concerns for pretty much everyone.
Well, we're talking a lot about what the impact might be on people's personal finances. Helen in Sussex has emailed moneybox@bbc.co.uk to make a different point. She says, as an NHS nurse, those people who are saying they won't pay more tax because it's their money, well, I have a question for them. Who will then pay for our free lifetime healthcare, policing if we're a victim of crime, benefits if we're sick, etc., if we all made that decision? Do join in the discussion if you want to drop us an email. Elsa, is there a sense that any pain in the budget will be targeted at more at higher earners rather than people who are already struggling?
Yes, I think that's true. So we can start with some positive news in that the Labour government said in their manifesto that there won't be increasing tax on working people. They're not going to increase national insurance, income tax or VAT, and they promised to cap corporation tax this Parliament too. But they have told us those with the broader shoulders will carry that burden. And as Helen mentioned, I think that's probably right.
That's a really interesting point, though, what they ruled out during the election campaign, because those big four taxes together make up just shy of 75% of all tax revenues, according to the Institute for Fiscal Studies. What's actually left?
Well, we have an inheritance tax, capital gains tax, pensions, although I personally feel that could also be a tax on working people. They changed the pension rules. But capital gains tax and inheritance tax are the big ones.
And Elsa, is there anything they could do to raise more tax from those big four taxes they've sort of ruled out? They've ruled out hiking the rates. Is there anything else they could do there?
Well, we have seen chancellors freeze the allowances. So when people earn more and the allowances don't change, they do in fact pay more tax. Some people call that a stealth tax. So that could be a way that they could impact people in income tax.
Thank you. Kirsty, it must be quite hard to be a financial planner in this limbo state at the moment. Briefly, are your clients trying to prepare for what they think might be in the budget?
Yeah, so part of it is really just understanding what's causing clients the most anxiety. Is there anything we can do to alleviate that that's not going to be detrimental if the worst doesn't happen? So rather than making big sweeping changes to their plans, is there anything we can accelerate in terms of what we're doing rather than changing everything we were planning to do already?
Okay, so Elsa thinks that inheritance tax, capital gains tax, maybe pensions. Let's start with capital gains tax. This is the tax you pay on the profit when you sell an asset that's gone up in value. Last year, it's estimated it raised £15 billion for the country's coffers. Now, we know taxes can be tricky, so I went to Warrington in Cheshire, and as people there tried to get on with their shopping, I interrupted them for a fun tax quiz, which was just what they needed. Will you play my game, What's That Tax?
Yes.
Are you willing to play my game, What's That Tax?
Go on then, yeah.
Will you play What's That Tax?
I'll try.
What do you know about capital gains tax?
I think that's something to do with anything that... it's not to do with earnings. It's more to do with assets that you have and you're taxed on.
Currently, 22% on your gain over the given period.
Depends on the asset, depends on the tax band you're in.
Okay, all right, okay. Well, it's quite high at the moment.
I don't really know a lot about capital gains tax at all, really. Only that it's you pay capital gains tax if you've got more than one property, but I don't really understand that at all.
Is that something you'd be happy for the Chancellor to maybe increase the rates on to raise more money?
No, not really, because we've kind of earned this money to be able to buy, like I've got another property. We've earned this money and then we're being like retaxed again, and it's like being taken off us, and we've kind of worked hard for it.
Thank you, Warrington. Elsa, clearly a lot of people understand the idea of capital gains tax, not necessarily how much it is or when it's paid. Can you explain?
Yeah, I think there's some really good understanding amongst the listeners. As a capital gains tax is a tax on the gain you'd make on the value of assets like real estate, like stocks and shares. It's currently the main rate is 20%, although I think we have five rates of capital gains tax for different types of assets. The biggest one that affects most people is the second property tax, and that's currently at 24. So your listeners are pretty close.
Okay, and Kirsty, that last person I spoke to says she feels it's double taxation. It's on money they've already been taxed on. That's not really the case, is it? This is on profits.
Yeah, I think that's the key difference. So sometimes people think that it's based on if I have an investment or if I have a property valued at something, then if I sell it, then the whole value of that is going to be subject to be taxed. But actually, it is just, I say just, but it is the profit you've made. And so if you have a second property, that can be a substantial amount. However, it's not what you actually put into the property in the first place.
Thank you. Right. Lots of questions in the inbox about this. First of all, let's hear from Madeline, who isn't sure if she should be paying it.
I sold my little retirement flat and had the chance to rent a flat in another area, which was far more pleasing. So on paper, I have £125,000 invested. But that investment helps me pay my bills living in a rented flat. So I just wondered, am I liable for capital gains tax even though I don't own a property. I thank you for such a wonderful programme. Actually, I wish it was longer.
Madeline, thank you. We wish it was longer too. Kirsty, let's tackle that main question. First of all, is Madeline liable for capital gains tax?
So if she sold her main residence, she won't be liable to any capital gains tax on what's happened previously. It sounds like that might be the case, but obviously just to double check. With the £125,000 that Madeline has saved, if she's invested that in an investment that isn't in an ISA, for example, then she might pay capital gains tax on any profit above that £125,000. But she could mitigate that or try and manage that a bit better if she's able to either sell some of it or transfer some of that to a cash ISA or a stocks and shares ISA, which won't be subject to capital gains tax.
Okay, and Kirsty, how can someone find out if they need to pay this tax?
Yeah, so obviously, if you're looking at complex transactions, reach out to an accountant. They're the specialist. They'll be able to advise someone. But very simply, if you're looking at something that's not in an ISA or not in a pension, that's when you might start raising alarm bells, and you might want to speak to someone about that.
And when does it need to be paid?
Yeah, so it's not paid when you sell the asset. It's not paid the day you sell it. It's due on your self-assessment, which is normally the following year. So if you sold something today, you wouldn't actually have to pay the tax liability until January 2026.
Thank you very much. Very exact. And there is, of course, a tax-free allowance for capital gains tax. Used to be well over £12,000. That's already come right down to £3,000. Right, let's hear from Julie, who sent us this.
I'm retired, as is my husband. We have some pension income, but we also have investments in stocks and shares. We use the sale of some of those shares each year to supplement our income. That's how we fund our life. I'm nervous about what's going to happen in the budget. There's been a lot of talk about aligning capital gains tax rates with earned income rates. That if that didn't take into account inflation at all, that seems a very, very high rate of taxation. You know, some of the stocks that I have, I've owned since the 1980s or 1990s. We prioritized our financial security over things like really nice cars and lots of nice holidays. And now it feels like we're kind of being penalized in that we're going to have to pay possibly a very high rate of tax.
Julie, thank you so much for sending us that. Elsa, we should just reiterate, we don't actually know what's going to be in the budget, but this is the kind of thing that's clearly worrying some of our listeners. Julie's worried they're going to align capital gains and income tax. What would that mean, and what would be the rationale for that?
So the policy decision is really about increasing that tax take and putting the tax burden on a different group of people in society. But we mustn't forget, for a long part of my career, certainly, we did have alignment with capital gains tax and income tax. But we also had a lot of reliefs to relieve that higher burden at 40%. And as your listener mentioned, there's no sort of uplift for the length of time you've held it. But we did have what we called indexation allowance and some other allowances that did exactly that. So the longer you held an asset, the less the tax burden really was. So I would expect if tax rates are aligned, there'd be some additional reliefs.
Okay, thanks. Kirsty, Colin has emailed to say, if there are changes, is it likely they'll be immediately implemented, as in come in on the 30th of October, or is the view that it would be from a date in the future, like the next tax year? And he wants to know for his financial planning.
Yeah, it's a really good question. And I think on this occasion, it's really been the first time that clients have been more concerned about an immediate change. It is very unusual for things to change overnight. Okay, it has happened before, but it is unusual. And there are certain taxes which just simply cannot be changed overnight. So normally when there are big sweeping changes, there is notice. So you have until the financial year end, so until April, to make some changes or prepare yourself. But there is that risk still there.
Right. Thank you. We have had a bit of a historic moment for Moneybox Live. We've had our first WhatsApp message. The person doesn't give their name. They say, I find it very childish that people complain about having money taken off them for taxes. Taxes pay for schools, the NHS, etc., which these people no doubt use. How do they think it's funded? Do keep your thoughts coming this afternoon. Right. Another tax that might be on the Chancellor's table is inheritance tax. That raised almost £8 billion last year, which was a record figure. Let's head back to Warrington to see what people know about it.
A tax that you pay when a parent dies, okay, and basically, yeah, they assess it and you may well have to pay a certain amount of tax depending if it's over a certain value.
What do I know about inheritance tax?
What's that tax?
Basically, it's just a tax that's put on if you have a certain amount of money and you're over the threshold, if you die with a lot of money.
How would you feel if the Chancellor changed that, maybe reduced the threshold, increased the rates?
I think that an inheritance tax increase would be very, very unpopular. I think primarily because there is a real problem with people paying nursing home fees, and I think that 40% is already a significant lump sum.
I think you've got a cheek, actually. And if anything, with the way that property prices are increasing, they should up the threshold.
I think that's actually good because the general wealth that's been passed down through families for many, many generations is still something that needs to be addressed.
I just want to thank the good people of Warrington again for letting me stop them in the rain to test them on their tax knowledge. Kirsty, a lot of people I spoke to understood it was 40%. They didn't know when it kicked in. Can you just explain the rules?
Yeah, absolutely. So essentially, an individual has an allowance of £325,000 that can be passed on free from inheritance tax on their death. And in addition, if they own a property, they can essentially pass on an extra £175,000. So a single person can pass on £500,000 before being subject to any tax at all. And a couple get double that figure. So if you're a couple and you're married and you have assets of £1 million, they can be passed on tax-free to your beneficiaries, to your children or your grandchildren. Anything above that is subject to that 40% tax rate.
So if you're a couple, you have to be married or in a civil partnership. You can't just be a cohabiting couple.
Absolutely, yeah. So that's the rules. And there are nuances in terms of who your estate is left to as well. So if you are leaving it to your children or direct descendants, it's the full £1 million. If you're leaving it to other people, there are slight complications around that, which might not allow you the full £1 million.
Okay, Elsa, a lot of people feel very strongly, don't they, about inheritance tax. Only a minority of states actually pay it, though, something like 1 in 20.
Yeah, I think the last figures we've got are about 4% of deaths resulted in IHT. And it is one of the most hated taxes. People really resent it. And it doesn't bring in a huge amount of money. And it's very complex.
Well, almost 8 billion quid. It's quite a bit of money.
Yeah, I guess not compared to the total tax take.
So, Kirsty, what might change with inheritance tax? And why do you think the Chancellor might have this one in her sights?
I think that when we're looking at from a policy perspective, obviously it is a really emotive tax. But when they have promised not to impact working people, actually, those people with a large amount of wealth in their property or actually wealth beyond their needs, from a policy perspective, it may be something they can look into. It's also that £1 million, like we've said, it doesn't impact a huge amount of people. Okay, so we are looking at the wealthier people in society that will be paying inheritance tax. Okay, and so it's kind of balancing out and saying, you know, this tax has to come from somewhere and who should burden that?
Well, again, lots of inheritance tax emails. Catherine has sent us this voice note.
Hello, Moneybox Live. My name's Catherine. I have a query about inheritance tax and how it affects single people, which seems to me terribly unfair, as it is at the moment. I was divorced, and because of this, it means that my heirs are going to have to pay inheritance tax on anything over £500,000. And the value of my house alone, I think, is probably more than this. It's not that I object to paying inheritance tax, but I do find the situation very unfair to single or divorced people. So how is this fair? Am I missing something?
Well, a lot of our listeners have actually been in touch about that issue. Diane emailed with the same question. Robin says, not only do single people pay more in bills, we're also penalised after death. Tony has emailed to say, please explain how that is fair and equitable. Elsa, do our single listeners have a point?
Well, the nil rate bands do attach to the individual. So each individual has the same nil rate band and same exemptions. What we found with the sharing of this, when we talk about couples having, say, a million, it's because since, I think it's about 2007, you've been able to inherit your spouse or civil partner's nil rate band. So what would usually happen if you have a married couple, what we usually see is they transfer their assets to each other and then pay inheritance tax on the second death. But really, you've got two individuals with two lots of assets, and they each get the 325 or the 500,000. So arguably, they're not being treated any differently.
I feel like we're going to get more emails on that. Kirsty, we've had a slightly surprising email from Stephen, who's in his 70s. He has three children with his ex, but he says he's considering remarrying her and then just carrying on living separately. Now, I don't know if Stephen is actually being serious, but are other people making decisions like that?
Yeah, so I wouldn't be the first financial advisor to recommend my clients get married for financial reasons. Okay, it's not very romantic at all, but there are certain allowances that are more beneficial when you are a married couple. Okay, so I've got clients who have been together for decades, have just never wanted or felt the need to get married. And if I'm looking at it from a pure tax point of view, it's often much simpler if they are. So, Stephen, valid conversation and consideration, but obviously your lifestyle and what you're doing in life is a bit more important, hopefully, than just the tax consequences.
And his ex might have something to say about it as
absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely.
I'm just trying to imagine what wedding present you'd get. I suppose two toasters. Right, the last one we're going to look at today, pensions tax relief. This one was quite tricky for our Warrington volunteers.
I'm not of pensionable age, so I don't really know an awful lot on that. I can't help you with that one. What's it called again?
Pensions tax relief. So where the government adds, you know, essentially gives you your tax back on the money you save into your pension.
Right. I don't know an awful lot on it, so I can't really answer that one.
Pensions tax relief. What do you know?
That I'll never get a pension. Pretty much. But no, I don't know too much about that.
What about pension tax relief?
I don't really know much about that, if I'm honest.
Well, a lot more people confused about this one than any of the other taxes I asked them about. Kirsty, enlighten them. What is tax relief on pensions?
So tax relief on pension is when you're paying into a pension. Okay, so when you make a contribution into a pension through your work often, the government will give you 20% uplift on whatever you've contributed to that pension as a minimum. And if you're a higher or additional rate taxpayer, so if you're earning over £50,000, you can actually claim back even more tax relief based on your income tax rate.
How might it change?
I think there's lots of conversations around an equalisation. So actually saying rather than higher or additional rate taxpayers getting 40 or 45% tax relief and basic rate taxpayers, so the everyday person is only getting 20%. There's conversations around capping that at 30%, for example. It is speculation. Logistically, that's incredibly hard to implement straight away. But that on paper would mean that everyone's getting the same amount of relief about of what they're putting into their pension.
Elsa, the Institute for Fiscal Studies says the current system gives an overly generous tax break to people with the most money. Can you explain that?
So, yes, following on from what Kirsty said, if you want to make a contribution and you're a basic rate taxpayer, you get less, it costs you more than if you're a higher rate taxpayer. So I think the 30% tax break and unifying that is quite an interesting policy suggestion because it would reduce the cost of savings for those on lower rates of income. And the question is then, does it deter the top end, the top tax bracket payers? And I don't think it would. I think the cost of saving into a pension would increase for them, but it still provides really good access to a tax-free environment for building up savings, so it's still very attractive.
Kirsty, potentially attractive, but is it tricky? Because people get help with their pension savings in two different ways, don't they? They can get relief paid into their accounts, but some people use salary sacrifice to pay into their pensions, so they simply pay it from their untaxed income. And isn't that going to be harder to limit?
Yeah, so it will be really tricky to implement. So you're asking a company and a HR to completely change how they're paying and their payroll and everything like that. It's also going to be much harder to report on. And at the moment, it's relatively simple to know who's paying what into a pension. And the onus is on the individual to reclaim tax if they're higher or additional rate taxpayers. But this would shift a lot of work onto companies if it is a salary sacrifice arrangement. And it would be tricky to implement that immediately. I think they would need to give some time for people to react to that.
OK, well, pensions tax relief, of course, is one part of the support savers get. Another is the chance to withdraw up to 25% of a pension as a tax-free lump sum. Jim has been in touch. He's worried that might change and then change his planning.
At the moment, I haven't taken my 25% tax-free allowance from my pension pot. But obviously, I'm worried in case the government make changes and I don't have sufficient time. So the question was, can they immediately change the rules and then I won't be able to take my 25% tax-free?
Kirsty, what are the rules around the tax-free lump sum at the moment? And could the amount you can take be cut, be capped?
Yeah, so at the moment you can actually take up to £268,275, a very specific number, from pensions tax-free in your lifetime, okay? And it has to be 25% of the total value of your pension, okay? It has been reduced. So at one point many, many years ago, it was £450,000. It gradually was reduced quite significantly, and we've seen it back up to that £268,000 limit. It could change in theory. Historically, where there have been changes to what you can take from a pension and when you can take it, there has been some notice period or a grace period. So that's one that we could see in April, for example. A lot of people make big retirement decisions and actually, can I afford to retire and can I pay my mortgage off when I retire based on this tax-free allowance? So reducing that significantly will alter an awful lot of people's retirement planning. So from a policy perspective, it's a really big decision, and we'd also see that heavily impact NHS staff, teachers, things like that, which again does not form part of what the Labour government really have shown or at least said they want to do.
Thank you. I want to just return to capital gains tax. We've had a few emails. Here's one from Mike who says, I think your information about CGT was slightly misleading. Although you have to pay it at your next self-assessment date, you still have to declare it within 60, he says, days of the sale or face a penalty. Kirsty, is Mike correct?
Actually, I can take this one.
Oh,
so
great.
Mike is a little, it's sort of correct. So generally, on most assets other than residential property, it is the 31st of January after the end of the tax year in which you dispose of something. So if it's a share you sell today, you'll pay it in January. However, if it's residential property, he's absolutely right. You have 60 days to declare and pay that tax. So we've got two different filing deadlines.
Brilliant. Thank you. And Mike and everyone who's emailed in on that, thank you very much. There is, of course, loads of guidance on all the taxes that we've been talking about in today's programme on the government-funded Money Helper website. I've got about 30 seconds to finish with a last bit of guidance, I think. Kirsty, anyone who's worried, what should they do?
I think please don't make any sweeping changes to your plans or your retirement based on speculation. Whenever there's a budget, there is always a lot of speculation. It's been heightened this time around.
And really briefly, Elsa, in a sentence, what should people consider?
If people were going to do something anyway, then probably get on and do it, but take advice and consider it really carefully.
Right. I am afraid the briefcase is slamming shut on this Moneybox Live podcast. And we haven't even cleared the inbox because you've all been sending so many questions. Don't worry, though. We will have a special budget Moneybox Live on Wednesday, the 30th of October, just a short while after the Chancellor finishes speaking. If you'd like to take part in that programme, then email us now. It's moneybox@bbc.co.uk. Or you can WhatsApp us, a new thing for our podcasters. The number is 03306 783 183. That's 03306 783 183. Thank you to everybody who contributed to today's discussion, and thank you to our experts who I managed to resist calling taxperts. You've been hearing from Elsa Littlewood from BDO and Kirsty Stone from the Private Office. Don't forget to catch Paul Lewis with Moneybox at midday on Saturdays or afterwards on BBC Sounds. In this podcast, the producer was Sarah Rogers, studio manager Joe Stickler and Chloe Wilson. Our editor is Jess Quayle. I'm Felicity Hannah, and this was a BBC News Money and Work production for BBC Sounds.
It's election time in the United States, but this is social media's world, and the election is just living in it.
Accurate information about elections, unfortunately, is not as entertaining as false information.
Join me, Mariana Spring, as I uncover how life online is shaping American people and American politics.
None of us know what's going on, but we do all know that something isn't right.
Deepfakes, polarizing algorithms, hate and conspiracy theories.
To me, there's no other logical explanation. That entire thing was staged.
Why Do You Hate Me, USA? From BBC Radio 4. Listen now on BBC Sounds.
Jetzt ist Herbst und bald stehen schon wieder die Feiertage vor der Tür. Das kann auch für Hunde ganz schön stressig sein. Viele Vierbeiner reagieren unter anderem mit einer gestörten Verdauung und das ist wiederum Stress für ihre Besitzer. Aber es gibt schnelle und einfache Hilfe, das Probiotikum Purina ProPlan Fortiflora. Streu einfach einen Beutel über das tägliche Futter. Die außergewöhnliche Zusammensetzung mit lebenden guten Darmbakterien stellt das Gleichgewicht im Darm wieder her.
Natürlich kannst du Proplan Fortiflora auch präventiv oder bei alltäglichen Verdauungsbeschwerden einsetzen. Es unterstützt auch bei Ernährungsumstellungen oder Antibiotikaeinnahme. Purina Proplan Fortiflora. Jetzt auf shop.purina.de.
ServiceNow unterstützt ihre Business-Transformation mit der KI-Plattform. Alle reden über KI, aber die KI ist nur so leistungsfähig wie die Plattform, auf der sie aufbaut. Lassen Sie die KI arbeiten, für alle. Beseitigen Sie Reibung und Frustration Ihrer Mitarbeiter und nutzen Sie das volle Potenzial Ihrer Entwickler. Mit intelligenten Tools für Ihren Service, um Kunden zu begeistern. All das auf einer einzigen Plattform. Deshalb funktioniert die Welt mit ServiceNow. Mehr auf servicenow.de/AI for People.